Welcome to Disc 2 of the Marriage Max audio production of Marriage Fitness. Now, here again is the author, Mort Fertel.
Chapter 2, How to Find the Soul of Your Mate. Creating love between you and your spouse is the key to a phenomenal marriage and a fulfilling life. But in order to understand the depth of that idea, you have to know what I mean when I say love. What really is love? And what really is the connection that is the secret to creating it? Love is not a mystery. Love is actually quite simple. But in order to appreciate love's simplicity, we have to explore some complex issues. The former Supreme Court Justice Oliver Wendell Holmes said, "I would not give a fig for the simplicity this side of complexity, but I would give my life for the simplicity on the other side of complexity." In other words, the most difficult questions usually have simple answers. But you can't understand how profound the simple answer is unless you struggle with the complexity of the question. For example, you can't get any simpler than E equals MC squared, but there are very few people with enough knowledge of physics who are able to grasp the brilliance of Einstein's discovery. Love is simple, but you can only appreciate its simplicity after you go through its complexities. Follow closely the discussion in this chapter, and soon you will appreciate the simple truth about love. Knowing your spouse. Connecting is the key to creating love. But in order to connect with your spouse, you need to know where in your marriage to create that connection. What part of you, when connected with the corresponding part of your spouse, is transformative? In other words, where does love happen? One night, my wife and I invited some friends to dinner. One friend asked why I sold my business and traveled around the world for a year. I explained that I wanted to embark on a journey of self-discovery. I wanted to take some time to try to find myself. Just as I made that remark, my son, who was 3 years old at the time, looked at me inquisitively. I could see from the expression on his face that he was confused. What does it mean that Daddy took time to find himself? He probably wondered. How did he lose himself in the first place? Our dinner guests seemed to understand what I meant, but I wonder if it would have been more honest of them to be confused like my son. What does it mean to find yourself? Who are you? What was I looking for on my journey of self-discovery? Why would I travel around the world to find myself? No matter where I go, isn't that where I am? If I had found myself, what would I have discovered? Who am I really? When someone meets you for the first time, they might ask you, "What's your name? Where are you from? What do you do?" They're asking these questions in order to get to know you. Your appearance and manners offer them information too. A business suit makes a very different personal statement than a t-shirt. Eventually, people also get to know your qualities, whether you're warm or aloof, friendly or reserved, rude or gracious, angry or good-natured, charming or boorish, obnoxious or agreeable, kind or mean-spirited. Think about yourself. What do you like? If you were in a movie, how would you describe your character? What is your scene? What is your role? Take some time to consider your appearance, your health, your physique, your social life, your family life, your finances, your personality, your abilities, your disposition, your environment, and your outlook on life. Turn off this recording now, and using these categories as a guide, make a list of everything you know about yourself. Review your list. Do you like yourself? Identify something on your list you want to change and with it in mind, say, I want to change myself. What did you mean when you said that? Who is the I that wants to change? And who is the self that would be changed? Think about that question for a moment. When you say you like yourself, hate yourself, or want to change yourself, you make yourself both the subject and the object of the same sentence. How could that be? When I say I like myself, who is the I doing the liking? And who is the self being liked? What is the distinction between I and myself? Between the subject and the object? On the one hand, there is no distinction. I am one person. On the other hand, the way we speak reflects that we intuit a distinction and a multiplicity within our soul being. And this is precisely the confusion my son experienced when I said I was looking for myself. There is only one you, but there is a duality within you. Who am I is not a simple question to answer. The poet Walt Whitman said, I am vast. I contain multitudes. Let's further explore the duality within you, because understanding it is essential to connecting with your spouse and creating true love. There are two aspects to your existence. First, there is your character, which is everything you know about yourself. It's critical to understand that when I refer to your character, I mean much more than just your character traits. Your character is the entire role you play in life. It's everything on the list you made describing yourself. It's everything and anything you could say about yourself. Your character includes your character traits, but like a character in a movie, your character also includes your appearance, your health, your physique, your social life, your family life, your work life, your finances, your personality, your abilities, your disposition, your environment, and your outlook on life. My character is named Mort Fertel. He's 5'10" tall and 145 pounds. He has brown hair and blue eyes, and he often wears a navy blue cardigan sweater. He lives in Baltimore with his wife and 4 children. He's an author, businessman, and marriage fitness coach. He likes to read, write, and be with his family. He does not like to cook or do house repairs. His strengths are, his weaknesses are, he believes, he does not believe. All these types of things are part of our character. The second aspect to your existence is more difficult to describe and understand. You can't say anything about it. It's that part of you not on your list. It's not on your list because it's the part of you that made the list. In other words, there's your character, which is everything about you that can be observed, your list. And then there's the observer within you. Another way to look at this is to look at the difference between everything about yourself that you like and dislike and the you that is formulating those preferences. There is a part of you that you know, and then there is a part of you that knows. This part of you is uniquely human. It's what allows you to be self-aware. Did you ever get angry with yourself? How does that work? Who's angry with whom? Did you ever talk to yourself? Who's talking to whom? Did you ever make yourself laugh? Who's laughing at whom? Do you see that there is another part of you that interacts with your character? When you were a child, did you ever ask yourself who you would be if your mother had married another man? It's a strange question, isn't it? It's a profound question, too, because children who ask that question intuit the duality of their nature. A child who asks, who would I be if my mother had married another man, senses that the part of himself that is self-aware, his I, his knower, could be matched with a completely different character. The new character could look different, have different parents, live in a different place, and play with different toys. Everything the child knows about himself could be different. He could be a completely different character. But the question the child asks is still, who would I be if my mother had married another man? Because the child intuits that in the most essential way, he would still be himself. The same knower. The same I. The child knows that his character can change, but his I, the self-aware part of himself, cannot. Think about how much you've changed over the years. You can easily see some of these changes in your photo album. Think through the stages of your life and what you were like during them. Think about a time in your life when you were very different from the way you are now. Recall your appearance, your health, your physique, your social life, your family life, your work life, your finances, your abilities, your environment, and your outlook on life. Recall your personality and disposition, which are part of your character too. They may have changed, but, as explained in Chapter 1, they usually do not. Turn off this recording and make another list describing yourself during this stage of your life. Compare this list with the list you made earlier in the chapter. Notice how much you've changed. Now, consider that you are the same. You've changed, but you were always you, right? It's the same knower knowing a new character. One part of you changed, but another part of you is constant. The duality of your existence is evident even at the molecular level. Biologists explain that every day cells of your body die and are replaced with new ones until eventually you are physically not the same person. And yet, you know there is a part of you that is exactly the same. Physically, your character is constantly changing. Essentially, you remain the same. Think about your compact disc player. The music you hear changes depending on the compact disc you insert. But regardless of the music being played, it's always the same player. Your character changes over time, like compact discs in a player. However, there is a part of you, your knower, your essential I, that never changes. It's like the compact disc player. It experiences the changes, but remains constant. It's fixed, while the other part of you is in flux. Without getting too mystical, the part of you that is aware of your changing character is your soul. Your soul is your core, your essential self. Your soul observes all the changes in your life while remaining constant. It's the compact disc player. It's your unchanging I. How does this relate to connecting with your spouse and creating phenomenal love in your marriage? Becoming soulmates. To create phenomenal love in your marriage, you have to connect with your spouse. But what do you connect? Do you connect your characters or your souls? If you try to connect your characters, you're looking for love in all the wrong places. You may have the best intentions. You and your spouse may put forth a valiant effort. You may learn to get along better and fight less. But connecting your characters so they're compatible will not create love in your marriage or fulfillment in your life. Love is a result of a core connection. That's what it means to be soulmates. Compatibility is a worthy objective for friends, acquaintances, and business associates. It's important to learn how to get along with people. It's even important to extend a special effort to improve your compatibility with certain people, such as your family, your boss, or your office colleagues. But compatibility is not the objective of marriage, and it certainly doesn't lead to profound love. Imagine walking in New York City, and someone in their car rolls down their window and asks, "Excuse me, but could you tell me how to get to the London Bridge?" Sometimes we're in the wrong place asking the wrong question. If you're in a car in New York City, you can't get to the London Bridge. And if you're focused on compatibility, you can't get to transformative love. Most of us were raised with a Calvinistic work ethic and taught that we can accomplish anything if we try hard enough. But success in some things is not a function of effort. Sometimes it's a matter of wisdom. If you're driving in New York City, it doesn't matter how hard you try to get to the London Bridge. You won't get there. But with a little wisdom, you could make your way to the airport and be at the London Bridge within 24 hours. Everyone wants a phenomenal marriage, but most couples' efforts for love are actually efforts for greater compatibility. But improving compatibility to find love is like driving in New York City looking for the London Bridge. You won't find it. You're simply in the wrong place. I remember trying desperately to solve our marital problems. We were very frustrated with each other. The harder we tried, the more stressed out we felt. Every time we talked about a problem, not only did we fail to resolve it, but we ended up fighting too. Our efforts to make things better kept making matters worse. The turning point for us came when we shifted our focus from improving compatibility to connecting at our cores. When we stopped dealing with our problems and started becoming soulmates, that's when we found solutions. Creating phenomenal love is a process of becoming soulmates. It has very little to do with character compatibility. Success in love takes more than work. It takes wisdom. You have to know where to direct your efforts. Transformative love occurs at your core. Direct your efforts there. How to endure change. When you and your spouse connect at your cores and become soulmates, you experience life very differently than if your marriage is based on compatibility. Let's explore some significant ways life can be different for you. In Chapter 1, we discuss that you and your spouse's personality do not change significantly. However, there are many aspects of your character that do change. Your bodies change, your careers are likely to change, you enjoy different hobbies at different stages of your life. Most of your character is in constant flux. If your marriage is based on compatibility, you and your spouse's character changes will upset your relationship. Consider a man who divorces his wife primarily because she became a career woman instead of the homemaker he married. He didn't want his wife to make this change, but divorcing her is like returning a compact disc player because you didn't like the music it played. Characters change. That's a fact of life. If your marriage is based on compatibility, you're on shaky ground. Soulmates, on the other hand, flow with each other's character changes because their marriage is not dependent upon their compatibility. Soulmates have a core connection that transcends their characters. Individually, soulmates change like everyone, but their marriage is insulated from those changes. It's secure at the core. Marriages based on compatibility can be threatened by character changes. If you're satisfied in your marriage because of the exuberant lifestyle your spouse provides, then your marriage could be threatened if your spouse's business went bankrupt or if the stock market crashed. If you're satisfied in your marriage because your spouse is a good caretaker, then your marriage might be threatened if your spouse were stricken with a debilitating illness. If you're satisfied in your marriage because of your spouse's appearance, then your marriage may experience stress as your spouse ages. Most couples try to resolve the problems that character changes create. For example, if one spouse is becoming more religious, the other may agree to attend services once a week. Just as some character changes strain marriage, others can provide relief. Like a scientist trying to find the right chemical balance, a couple can make adjustments in an effort to maintain equilibrium. Efforts like these are not completely futile, and character compatibility is certainly not bad. However, these efforts do not create love. They create compatibility. And the two are as far apart as London and New York. Marriages based on character compatibility are tenuous. You never know when your spouse will add a chemical that will disrupt the equilibrium. What if you change and your spouse cannot adjust? What if something beyond everyone's control changes the mix? Change is the enemy of marriages based on compatibility. Since change is a constant in life, marriages based on compatibility have a lot of battles to fight. If you're in a marriage based on compatibility, you're sitting on a time bomb. Eventually, some change will threaten your compatibility and trigger conflict. You can problem solve, but that will only provide relief until the next change. If your marriage is based on compatibility, it's vulnerable, and so are you. Consider a comic strip depicting a man trying desperately to get out of a box. He tries to climb over the top and cut through the walls. Finally, he escapes the box. In the next frame, the man is sitting outside the box, wiping his brow and breathing a sigh of relief. "Whew! Thank God I got out of that box," he says. But the reader can see something he cannot, which is that he's trapped inside another box. The problem with a marriage based on compatibility is that no matter how hard you try, no matter how many problems you solve, you're always trapped in a box. There's always a problem to solve or one that lays dormant. The only way out is to shift the focus of your marriage from your characters to your cores. The only way out is to become soulmates. Unfortunately, true love eludes most people, not because they don't find Mr. or Mrs. Right, but because they connect with them in the wrong place. True love is not about compatibility. It's about making a core connection. Consider your marriage. Is it based mostly on compatibility? Is your marriage dependent upon you or your spouse's looks, money, opinions, attitudes, social manner, travel interests, hobbies, career, or wardrobe? The key to achieving phenomenal love is not the ability to navigate the complexities of your marriage. Rather, it's the ability to realize the simplicity of it. The challenge is to see past all the externalities to the soul of the matter. This is where love happens, and this is where a marriage is protected from change. Connect at your cores, and you can change careers, hairstyles, hobbies, interests, friends, favorite restaurants, and fashion preferences. Through all your changes, your love will last. Unfortunately, there are heartbreaking stories about marriages breaking up after life-changing illnesses, face-maiming accidents, and bankruptcies. These are terrible challenges that can forever alter your life, but your love can endure. Connect at your core, and your marriage can survive anything. My wife and I are blessed with 4 healthy children. But our road to conceiving a family was extremely difficult. During her pregnancies, my wife spent many months in the hospital and on bed rest at home. When my wife was pregnant with triplets, I was home alone for 4 months with our 3-year-old, while my wife was confined to bed rest in the hospital. This was a very challenging time in our life, For practical purposes, I was a single father caring for a 3-year-old while running back and forth to the hospital to see my wife and try to uphold my responsibilities at work at the same time. As difficult as that pregnancy was, it doesn't compare to the trauma that we experienced on 2 separate pregnancies when my wife gave birth to children who died in the hospital less than 1 week after their birth. You never know what life will bring, but soulmates know that they can always rely on each other. Change can be all around you. The drama of life surrounding you, but stability and peace can be between you. Not even death will do your part. Soulmates are forever. William Shakespeare wrote, "Let me not to the marriage of true minds admit impediments. Love is not love which alters what an alteration finds, or bends with the remover to remove. Oh no, it is an ever-fixed mark that looks on tempests and is never shaken. It is the star to every wandering bark, whose worth's unknown, although his height be taken. Love's not time's fool, though rosy lips and cheeks within his bending sickle's compass come. Love alters not with his brief hours and weeks, but it bears it out even to the edge of doom. If this be error, and upon me proved, I never writ, nor no man ever loved." Connect at your core. From there, you can endure. The freedom to be yourself. Do you ever hide anything from your spouse? Do you ever feel inhibited? Are you sometimes hesitant to really be yourself? If you answered yes, you have a symptom of a marriage based on compatibility. You're hesitant to be yourself because you feel that your spouse won't love you. But the part of yourself you're scared won't be loved is not you. It's your character. And your fear is legitimate only if your marriage is based on your characters and not on your core. Soulmates can be themselves. When 2 people connect at their cores, they experience love regardless of their characters. It's not that soulmates don't have addictions, haunted pasts, body image issues, and other problems. Soulmates have flaws just like everyone else. The difference is, soulmates don't hide them. They don't have to. Their marriage is not dependent upon them being any particular character. Usually, the more impressive a person appears, the more we love them. So people appear as impressive as possible. But that's the experience of roommates. Soulmates have a different experience. Soulmates are natural with each other. They're not trying to impress each other. In fact, the deeper a couple's core connection, the freer they are to be themselves, and the less impressive they may appear to each other. For soulmates, appearances of character flaws are mitigated by the fact that their marriage is not based on their characters. True love actually exposes the most, but what's exposed ends up meaning the least. My wife and I once asked each other to share one thing about ourselves that we wouldn't want anyone else to know. I realize now that we each had a long list from which to choose. But as our love grew, so did our willingness to share. Now, we know the most, but it means the least. It's our love that really matters. "What do you love about him?" your friend asks when you're falling in love. "I love that I can just be myself," you respond. "But why do you feel you can be yourself?" It's because you connected at your cores. When you're soulmates, you can be any character. But if you're roommates, you're stuck with who you are. Escaping judgment. Do you feel inadequate for your spouse? Do you feel superior? Do you feel judged by your spouse? Do you judge? Once again, if you answered yes, you have a symptom of a marriage based on compatibility. Judgment and feelings of inadequacy or superiority result from character comparisons. But when the focus of your marriage is a core connection, there's nothing to measure. Every soul is incomparable. Some people trade in their marriages like they trade in cars. As one starts to wear down in their eyes, they shop for an improved model. Many people go through 5 to 10 significant relationships in their lifetime, including 2 or 3 marriages. In the beginning of each relationship, it seems they found a better deal. However, in time, each model wears down in their eyes, and history reveals a string of relationships with people whose characters are similar. But the problem is never the model. The problem is that they judge their spouse's character instead of connecting with their spouse's core. How many times have we heard stories of someone leaving their spouse for another mate? There are usually numerous reasons why people do this, but one of them is that people look for the newest and the best of everything. There's always someone with more hair, more money, more compassion, fewer problems, a better body, more muscles, and more energy. There's always a better deal out there is the perspective of someone looking for a role mate, not a soulmate. But role mates never last. Soulmates are forever. Don't judge or compare. In your quest for the best, you'll fail to win the most important prize, love. At your cores, you can have it all, and nothing compares. Getting great advice. Soulmates don't judge, but they do critique. In fact, soulmates are each other's best critics. When you connect at your cores, you find your soulmate, and you find your life coach, too. Soulmates can be any character, but they want each other to be their best character. Soulmates don't coach each other because they need their spouse to change. Soulmates only need love. Love comes from the core, not from character improvement. But soulmates want each other to improve their characters because they want the best for each other. Their coaching is an expression of love, not selfishness. When you love someone, you want what's best for them. A friend of mine once critiqued the business practice of mine. He was a doctor and had no way to benefit from my business improving. He was completely objective, and it was his objectivity that made him an effective incredible coach. If he had something to gain, he wouldn't be able to give objective advice, and I would not have been able to trust him. To be a good coach, you can't have an agenda. You can only have one interest, your spouse. If I advise my wife to exercise regularly because I'm attracted to athletic women, I'm being her role mate, not her soulmate. I'm not coaching, I'm judging. In order for me to be my wife's soulmate and her coach, I can only have one reason for wanting her to be physically fit: because it's good for her. Any other reason will sour the advice and soil our marriage. Soulmates are good coaches for each other because their marriage is not based on their characters. Soulmates don't need each other to improve for love. They want each other to improve because of their love. Finding security in your marriage. There is no worse feeling than being in a marriage with someone you think could leave you. We want to feel safe. We want to be with someone who's committed, no matter what. Many people feel vulnerable Even after marrying, many people sense that their spouse's commitment is conditional. People impose all sorts of conditions on their spouses. Men are notorious for making their love dependent upon a certain frequency of sexual activity. A person might be committed to a marriage as long as there is not too much fighting. Conditional marriages, including ones in which the conditions are met consistently, are inherently insecure because there is no certainty that any condition can be met forever. Do you feel secure in your marriage? Is your marriage conditional? Who is imposing the conditions, and what are they? You cannot achieve security in your marriage by trying to secure your conditions. Security comes from dropping your conditions and connecting at your cores. At your core, there is a permanent root of love no matter what. Sickness or health, poverty or wealth, trauma or peace. There are no conditions. At your core, love is secure. And I'm not talking about the security that comes from a promise or a vow. I'm talking about a deep security that is beyond words, a safety that can only be known in your soul. A friend of mine once told me why his fiancée was perfect for him. He explained his love for her in great detail. I was amazed he had so many reasons why they were right for each other. I knew it was a mistake. I knew she wasn't right. My friend spoke of conditions, but true love is ineffable. Soulmates are speechless. Soulmates don't have reasons for feeling secure in their marriage. The reason for their security is that they're soulmates. When spouses focus on conditions, they're not soulmates. They're roommates. But roles change, which is why marriages anchored in compatibility are not safe. Only soulmates are forever. Summary. There are two aspects to your existence. One, your character, which is the role you play in life. Your character is everything you know about yourself, including your character traits, personality, appearance, health, career, physique, social life, family life, finances, abilities, disposition, and your outlook on life. Two, your soul. This is your essential self, the core of your existence. Your character changes over time, like compact discs in a player. However, your soul never changes. It's like the compact disc player that plays different music. It experiences the changes of your character, but remains constant. It's fixed, while your character is in flux. This distinction is crucial because in order to make the connection with your spouse that transforms your marriage and your life, you have to know what to connect. Character compatibility is nice, but it has very little to do with true love. On the other hand, when you and your spouse become soulmates, when you connect at the core of your existence, the golden lens appears in your marriage and your life is transformed forever. This is the experience of love. Connecting at your core and creating love in your marriage has some distinctive advantages over a marriage based on compatibility. Those advantages are: 1. You and your spouse's character can change without those changes upsetting your marriage. 2. You and your spouse are completely free to be yourselves. 3. You and your spouse won't judge each other or be judged by each other. 4. You and your spouse will become each other's best advisor and most trusted life coach. 5. You will experience true security in your marriage. we've arrived at the million-dollar question. How do you and your spouse become soulmates? How do you create that core connection which results in phenomenal love and ultimate fulfillment in life? The answer is the Marriage Max 4-Step Plan. Chapter 3. Love is a Verb. Fine restaurants often serve intermezzo between courses. It's usually a small dish of flavored ice that's intended to cleanse your palate before the next course. On the menu, it counts as a separate course, but its primary purpose is transitional. This chapter is like intermezzo. It's small, and it has its own flavor, but its primary purpose is transitional. At this point, we have discussed what is essential to know about love. In short, love changes your experience of everything, and love is not about compatibility. It's a soul connection. The coming chapters of Marriage Fitness discuss how to create love, how to become soulmates with your spouse. Climbing in love. Love is not a feeling. It's something you do. You make a decision to love, and then you act. It's a choice and a deed. Love is a verb. Chapters 4 through 7 present the Marriage Max 4-Step Plan. Within the 4 steps are 20 exercises. The Marriage Max 4-Step Plan teaches you how to make love with your clothes on. It's not difficult to make love. You can implement these 4 steps immediately and create phenomenal love within weeks. It's definitely not rocket science. However, it does require effort, time, and commitment. You can't just sit there and expect the fireworks to be going off in the background. Marriage Fitness is not a quick fix. Marriage Fitness addresses the root of your relationship. To affect the root, you have to roll up your sleeves, dig down, and cultivate consistently. It takes work. It takes effort. It takes time. But the result is not simply the solution to problems or a compatible marriage. It's the transformation of your relationship. A physical fitness program takes more effort than liposuction, but the results are authentic and longer lasting. Marriage fitness takes discipline just like physical fitness, but the outcome is a fundamental transformation of your marriage, not merely a symptomatic one. Nothing truly worthwhile is easy. Marriage Fitness is no exception. But if you commit to the discipline of the Marriage Max 4-Step Plan, both the process and the results will be rewarding and profound. Are you ready? Are you willing to do the work? You might be thinking, if my marriage takes so much work and time, then something must be wrong. I must be with the wrong person. But the key to love is not finding the right person. It's learning to build lasting love with the person you found. And that's not easy. Hollywood portrays love as easy, but that's only in the movies, not in real life. Love was easy during your courtship, but that was when you had Mother Nature on your side. After a couple of years, those batteries are dead. Mother Nature leaves it up to you to keep your marriage charged. You're not going to fall in love again, at least not with the same person. You're going to have to make love. It's going to take time and effort. Think about it for a moment. You understand that this is how life works. You get out of something what you put into it. No pain, no gain, right? In every other aspect of life, you understand that success takes commitment, time, effort, and hard work. Why would you expect the most important thing in life, love, the one thing that transforms all else in life, to be any different? What if you don't feel like loving? What if you're angry or bitter? Love anyway. The best way to change how you feel is to change what you do. If you start loving, you will start feeling different. If you wait until you feel different, you'll be stuck forever. I want to offer a word of caution. If you're not used to devoting significant time and energy to your marriage, the Marriage Max 4-Step Plan can be overwhelming at first. There's no need to be overwhelmed. You don't have to implement everything at once. In fact, you should not implement everything at once. A marriage fitness plan is like a physical fitness plan. You can't go from zero to Olympic level over the weekend. It takes time, patience, and discipline. At the conclusion of this book, there is a section about the importance of implementing the plan at a reasonable pace and being comfortable with the exercises you've adopted before increasing your marriage fitness plan. There is also a suggested 14-week schedule for implementation. It's important to go slow. There's no rush and no reason to feel overwhelmed. Here is the Marriage Max 4-Step Plan. Let's go to work.